Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
And now it's time for the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show with Score Morning Show co-host Mully from the Mully and Haw Show, Bears long snapping iron man Patrick Manley, and Score football expert and former NFL player Anthony Herron on Sports Radio 670 The Score, Chicago's home for Bears fans, always live on the free Odyssey app. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook app today.
Oh, yes, indeed. It is the pregame show, and what a glorious show we have. We have Patrick Manley and Anthony Herron. And, guys, we have the Bears in Atlanta. We have the Bears with a grudge game for all of these ex-Bears. I don't know if this it's a grudge game, but the five coaches there, Pete, no, we don't know. And the two general managers are bursting with the we haven't heard from any of those guys. And the only guy that scares you is Cordero Patterson. How we doing this morning?
We're good, guys. Just a tough week after that loss to the Lions. I'm disappointed still. I said last week that that's a game they could have and should have won. And that would have been great for the locker room. But guess what? After watching these Falcons and seeing where they stand and who they are, they're almost a mimic of the Bears with their rushing offense and their terrible defense as well, that we got another winnable game. I'm not going to say very winnable, but it's another winnable game and a chance for these young Bears to go out there and maybe put something in the win column.
No doubt, to have the opportunity to take the field and say, you know what, I think our guys are as good as their guys to some extent.
Right.
But, you know, at least let you, when you're evaluating this thing, go into the game and say, all right, this team's got a shot. There's not a lot of games like this remaining on the schedule. You had the one last week against Detroit, like Patrick's talking about, and feels like this one. Even though Atlanta's truly in a battle for their division lead in the NFC South, it's not because they're an amazing team. It's because they're also in a weak division for this particular season. And personnel-wise, you don't necessarily see a lot of personnel advantages to the Falcons across the board. So it feels like a game the Bears can go on the road. And we've seen them compete virtually every week. But is it a game where they may have key players who can make key game-changing, game-winning type plays? And I'd say, yeah, the Bears got a shot at that.
Yeah, and I mean, look, if they don't win and if Minnesota wins, the Bears will be the first team eliminated from their division competition. That's more about the Vikings having a great year, but it's also about the Bears being in last place in the division right now.
Yes, we'll lose the graphic in the hunt. Is that what you're saying?
No longer.
A little bit of hope.
That's not what I'm saying. You're not eliminated from the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
But you're eliminated.
We're still in the hunt. As long as we're still in the hunt.
Yeah, you're not going to take the North. How's that? but the Bears have Justin Fields. And increasingly, that is the topic of conversation, the only topic of conversation. What we've seen from him repeatedly now. And what we've seen from Luke Getsy, the way he's leaning into what Fields can do, this is something worth watching, and I think it's also something worth staying with to the end of every game. And that's a glorious thing to see kind of unfold in front of you.
Oh, it is, man. He's exceptional, but there's still work to do. Anthony, I'm sure you've seen it too, him in the pocket, just not finding the right read, making the right throw. One example I have is from last week. He turned it into a completion and an amazing athletic ability that he has, but Byron Pringle was open right over the middle. He's sitting in the pocket looking at him. There's a little bit of color flashing from, I think, Cody Whitehair, but he has plenty of time to make the throw. Doesn't make the throw, spins out, then gets by some time, and then makes the throw to him and hits him for a 12-yard gain, I think it was. But that's one I'm sure that Luke Getsy and the guys there are coaching him up. Like, listen, if you want to be a great quarterback, you just need to be able to make that throw right away. Don't have to use your legs. You don't have to create because it is there. But he is fun to watch, and he is getting better. And that, I think, to us as Bears fans, that's what's most exciting, is to seeing how great of an athlete he is, being the best athlete on the field. And this growth is there, but there is more to come.
And all these reps end up mattering. All these opportunities are things that he's putting in the bank and getting the opportunity to grow from. And you get better at playing football by playing football. And so every time he takes a snap from center, there's something to be learned. There's potentially some play to be made. It is a very fun and exciting time to be a Bears fan, to evaluate this squad week in and week out, because you see a quarterback who's got all the potential in the world, and you're starting to see him realize some of that, while at the same time still recognizing what's around him and how new so many things within the franchise are at the moment. And then it turns into this kind of polarized discussion of either you feel like, you know, there's nothing left to learn about Justin Fields for this season, or, you know, you're just sort of, you know, cast aside as this guy who really, you know, wishes no greatness for him either. And it really should be somewhere in between the two. It doesn't mean that you got to see him as a finished product. It doesn't mean you got to think he's a bum. But I think we're seeing enough plays happen with recognizing that there will be more growth. There should be more growth for his first full season as a starter in the NFL and first year in Luke Getsy's offense. And there's a lot of cool things that Getsy has been doing with Justin Fields, with the players that the Bears have available to them on offense, and the progression that's happening. A lot of it is about just being in the system more as well. In addition to some of these wrinkles that have been added with, you know, a little bit more design QB run, you see a quarterback who's just getting more accustomed to the system as well, to the pre-snap phase of things, to all the ball handling that needs to happen post-snap. And yes, the pocket presence is still inconsistent, but that's improving. And that's where, you know, part of the crowd that thinks just have him throw the ball 50 times every game and we'll live with every mistake, I think there's a case to be made for that, and there are certainly some teams who take that approach. I think, you know, Jacksonville is taking that approach to some extent with Trevor Lawrence in a lot of their games. But I don't mind the somewhat patient and methodical approach that Luke Getsy and the Bears are taking too, saying what gives us the best opportunity for success, and what is this system that's here right now that suits the Bears? And it's not a high-volume passing offense. There's more passes available to Justin Fields. He just tends to turn some of them into really exciting scramble plays. So I don't have any issue at all with the way that they're operating from the volume of passes, because we are seeing Justin Fields progress as a passer without saying he's got to attempt 45 to 50 passes in a game.
Yeah, real quick, I think that's one thing that's hurting him a little bit, though. I'd love to get your guys' take on this. In the two-minute drill, to me, to run a two-minute drill, you've got to be a pocket passer. You've got to be able to read, you know, because defenses play a little bit more safe, and you've got to be able to read and react and make those throws from the pocket. And I think the limited number of true dropbacks that he's had all year and is kind of hurting him in the two-minute drill. Do you guys see that as well? I mean, it's just you can't take a 14-play, 7-minute drive in the 2 minutes. Obviously, that's common sense. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to throw it from the pocket, and you watch all the great ones, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, the guys that, you know, get it done at the end of games, they do it from the pocket. You know, yeah, he could maybe break a run for 67 yards or 61 yards or something like that, but that's not going to happen a lot. The more traditional way is trying to get it from the pocket in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, I think that...
Yeah, go on. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that because we haven't seen the offense have success in that regard, it can be lost a little bit that Justin has, of course, made some plays, made throws within some of those late-game two-minute scenarios. You know, this season, there's obviously some prime examples of it, but even going back to last year, we saw him as a rookie drive the team down the field against You know, Green Bay, he did it where like an important late game fourth quarter drive to get it within one score, and the defense gives up a decisive score to put the game away against San Francisco, against Pittsburgh. But then, of course, this season we saw it happen frequently in games. You know, Minnesota and Washington and Miami was one of them as well. I'm starting to lose track of the various opportunities that have been there in the fourth quarter with some of these games. But that being said, I think there's definitely growth to continue being made there. I feel like that growth is happening. I agree Justin is imperfect in those scenarios. There's times where it feels like he can hang in the pocket and cut it loose more frequently. But I don't necessarily feel like there's at least through my lens, a rush to get to the finish line. And I feel like that's what the discussion kind of turns into is like how quickly can we get to Justin as a finished product? I don't know. I think the progress he's making is pretty awesome.
I'm not arguing that. I do think, though, Pat's point is well taken, which is that when you get into he completed two passes for 13 yards in the fourth quarter. So when you get into a game where you're protecting a lead and you're running and all of a sudden now you're tied. Okay, well, then he breaks the big run and, you know, that's not supposed to happen in the NFL. I still am amazed that he can do that. Pat, I wonder if you feel watching him like you did with Hester, like, holy God.
No, 100%.
Like that can't happen. Like, that doesn't happen. But you get the lead back, and then when you get the ball, finally, where are you going? You're not in a rhythm as a passer. You're not doing that as an offense. I think maybe last week was just this sort of weird anomaly where you were playing one style, it was working, you're up a couple of touchdowns, and all of a sudden – it goes away, and now you're chasing the game, and you just don't have the rhythm as an offense that you need to go get points.
But is that conversation the same, guys, if they get the call against Miami where he sees Claypool one-on-one, where, you know, Darnell Mooney, if he catches the ball against the Commanders? I do feel like we're seeing the quarterback where there's been examples where Justin Fields has made the right read and the right throw. Again, it's imperfect. He ain't Tom Brady in the two-minute drill yet. But we've seen that he is capable of making the throw, making the play, and there have been times where either the officials have let the Bears down or his receiver hasn't caught the ball. And, you know, I do think there's progress that's already shown there without feeling like he's got to throw it dozens of times in game to really prove that.
And I'm kind of talking both sides out of both sides of my mouth, too, because you're right. The Equanimous St. Brown drop, that was a great throw. The Smith-Marset fumble, whatever the heck he did. You know, he's moving them, but I'm just kind of saying that if he did have more straight drop back passes, would he be a little bit better? Would that help his growth go a little faster? Maybe it would. And Anthony, I'm with you too on that I like the way they're going about it. I think they're doing it the right way. They're not force feeding him to throw the ball 50 times a game. They're just dripping it to him and let him get better over time.
And I think they're not force feeding Mully the offensive line either.
Yeah.
These wide receivers either.
They can't.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's especially for their not only their evaluation but their comfort level and in knowing and feeling like they know what the offense is and isn't capable of. You know, it's not only about whether or not Justin Fields can handle being a volume passer, it's does that benefit this offensive line, or are they just under siege, you know, when you go to more volume passing?
When you have as few targets as you have in the passing game, like Darnell Mooney, for example, last week, they threw the ball to him four times, and he caught all four of them. And you can't help but think, geez, just double that. You know, just keep throwing the ball to him. Look what the guy's doing. And I'd like to see them throw the ball more to Chase Claypool. You know, you mentioned some of those situations. A guy like that, a big guy, you know, who has a huge body, if he goes up, maybe he's more likely to make that catch than, you know, without having to double catch it or whatever happened with Mooney down at the 1 yard line. Or, and Pat, I would call you out on that. I don't think Equanimous St. Brown dropped them. It seemed like he waved at it as it went between his hands.
He was waving at it as it went by?
As it went through his hands.
Yes. Like, guys, would you look at that? A football went by. Who would have thought it?
Football. Oh, man.
Oh, boy. But anyway. What did you think about Fields coming out and saying that he was going to have to taper back this week because his legs were tired? The guy's got 555 running yards the last 5 weeks. He leads the NFL in rushing. I mean, he's 23, but my legs are tired watching him, for God's sake.
Anthony, let me take this real quick because I was thinking about this, the tapering back. And I always remember like Matt Forte or whoever a running back was in practice when they would have a run, they would always run to the goal line. Thomas Jones would always take it to the end zone. And then this next guy would hop in or whatever. So they're just, that's extra running. I'm wondering if on some of these QB runs that they call in practice, they tell him just to kind of run to the linebacker level, stop, turn around. Because one, he's the quarterback. You got to be back in the huddle. But two, that could help just the amount of, you know, how much running he's doing during practice. Because I'm sure they're calling quite a few or working on quite a few of those runs to get ready for the game. And I think that maybe is just a little thing that they could do to say, dial it back. Let's just don't take it all the way to the end zone. Don't run 50 yards. Right. Just run 7 and turn around and come back to the huddle.
Right, just kind of break into the second level and just get that initial burst, then glide and turn around and come on back. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of conversations that are happening about it, especially with his willingness to reference it publicly. And it is interesting. You know, Mully, you and I were talking about this a bit during the week, and I've referenced it on this show a number of times here, where Justin Fields wasn't like some, you know, wing T triple option quarterback in college. So this is new for his body in general during a football season. Obviously he's an incredible, a special athlete, but that athleticism as a running quarterback or at times as a run first quarterback, this is really his first foray into that. So it's I don't know, I'm intrigued by just even watching him and listening to him describe just the physical and mental gymnastics of how to sort of piece this together. He was a volume passer in college who happened to be the best athlete on the field. It wasn't the inverse of that. So he's, you know, that to me is what's so remarkable about this season, is that he is in a position, not just, you know, in the NFL and kind of just going through this whole situation for the first time, but in the style of play. This is the first time this remarkable athlete has played the quarterback position where his athleticism, where his mobility is the key threat to the defense. So there's a lot of this that he is learning on the fly, and he's just getting new information and compartmentalizing it. And it's really impressive to see that his game is so different now than anything he's ever been accustomed to before, and he's doing it at an elite level. It really impresses me that he's just kind of taking this information in and figuring out, how do I kind of make this work over the longest, well, I mean, this is his second year, not his rookie year, but certainly the longest season as a starter, as a full-time starter that he's ever been through. You know, guys hit the rookie wall sometimes, and there's a lot for him to piece through.
And in fairness about that subject, we talked to Biggs on Thursday. We were doing the afternoon show, Big Ant, and he said that he saw him driving in on a golf court, on a golf cart from practice, and that, you know, 40 minutes after practice, he's out there with Claypool and Mooney and Equanimeous St. Brown. And
the workaholic.
That's every day. So tapering back, this could be kind of a rope-a-dope thing. I mean, the tapering back could be what you're talking about, not sprinting on every play, but he's still out there throwing the ball to these guys as you need to do after practice every single day.
Yeah, guys, he's 23. I hate to say it, but he's 23. Yeah. With 23-year-old legs, man, you can go forever.
All right, we've got Brian Finnerman, who is going to join us from Atlanta. We'll get a chance to pick apart what the Falcons are doing, talk a little bit about how they attack things and what their situation is. It's obviously, as you say, their division a lot different than the Bears, and I'm sure that they're looking at this game as a very winnable game. But mirror teams, as we talked about, we'll discuss that. We'll pick that apart with Brian Finnerman, the former Falcon and the host on 680 The Fan in Atlanta. We'll do that next. You're listening to The Pregame Show, sponsored by Bet Rivers, the official sportsbook of the Bears. Download that Bet Rivers app today. Hey, and don't forget, go get yourself some Zing Zangs, the new Zing Zang Bloody Mary cocktail, the canned cocktail, premium vodka already in the can, and they're always ready. Perfect for game day tailgates. Please Zing Zang responsibly. We'll be right back with Brian Finnerman.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I actually was growing up. My dad had season tickets, so I would always, you know, go to the games with him and stuff like that. Probably Julio and Matt Ryan, of course, you know, growing up. So
it's the pregame show on The Score, and you heard there the voice of the quarterback. If that doesn't make you feel older, if he grew up watching Matt Ryan instead of Mike Vick, I don't know, right, man. That was pretty wild. But his dad, season ticket holder, he went to games. There'll be a lot of people supporting Justin Fields in the stadium today, and we are delighted to welcome in Brian Finneran. He, of course, with WCNN 680, The Fan in Atlanta, does the morning show there. You got to love a guy that does a morning show. And we've got Patrick Manley and Anthony Herron. And now we welcome Brian Finneran on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. And, you know, here in Chicago, it's gotten to a point now where all people really care about is if the quarterback can play well, and then hopefully they win, or maybe they just get a better draft pick. All anyone cares about is Justin Fields here in Chicago. What's it like there? What is the – I mean, you guys are in the thick of a division race, even though they're not having, you know, a great year.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of a different feel. We're not quite sure as a fan base what the heck's going on to the quarterback position with Marcus Mariota. And he's giving it his all. He's trying hard, and he's had some moments, but he's also cost us a couple games with some fumbling situations as well. I think a lot of the people down here are wondering when Desmond Ridder is going to get a nod at some point. Do we need to lose a couple more games then to get to see what he's all about? Or do we ride this thing out with Marcus Mariota? So we are in a totally different world quarterback position wise than you guys are with a young talent like Justin Fields and the way he's played the last few weeks. So it'll be fun to be, I'll be down to the game watching it and see how the whole thing kind of plays itself out.
And Finn, there were a lot of folks who were kind of wondering if this version of Marcus Mariota, this opportunity for Mariota behind center could maybe do something like going to the Titans did for Ryan Tannehill and kind of had this second act of his career and a resurgence. It doesn't necessarily seem like that's completely been the case, though, and you kind of alluded to it there. What's been your evaluation of Mariota so far?
It's just there's something missing. He throws it like a – I played with Chris Chandler, who could put the ball anywhere he wanted to on the football field, over linebackers, between DBs, perfect stride. Matt Ryan was the same way. Marcus seems to throw like a flatter ball with not as much ability to have the touch you need and intermediate throws. And I think that's what's really hurt his chances of being better than he is today. So there's just some throws between him and Kyle Pitts. I mean, Kyle Pitts got targeted, I think, 7 or 8 times last week, in the last 2 weeks, and has like 4 or 5 catches to show with 16 or 17 targets. So you just can't live that way. You can't miss opportunities that we've had. So he's been okay. Listen, Marcus is fun to watch. I mean, he's super athletic still. He can throw it a long way. There's just that intermediate touch pass that he seems to be missing, and there's some big plays we've left out on the football field.
Brian, I love that you brought up Chris Chandler, throwing him in there. That's great. I was texting with him the other day. He's our guy. Hey, man, you mentioned playing with those quarterbacks, and you also played with Michael Vick. And we have a guy up here in Chicago, you know, Justin Fields, that's just, you know, the best athlete on the field. Obviously, you were one of the best athletes out there as well. But what was it like playing with Michael Vick and just seeing some unscripted plays and just playing with somebody that's that gifted out there as a, at the quarterback position?
It's awesome. To get a chance to play 5 years with Michael Vick like I did was special. It's different. It's a different mindset you have to have as a receiver. Remember, we traded for Peerless Price, like in 03 or 04. And Peerless is coming down from Buffalo, playing with Eric Moulds and Bledsoe and the other quarterback that was up there, slipping my mind right now. But it was throw, 90-plus catches, 1,500-yard receivers, 10 touchdowns. I mean, that's not how it goes in Atlanta with Michael Vick as your quarterback. You're a run-first football team. You got a three-headed monster at the time with, like, T.J. Duckett and Warwick Dunn, and Michael Vick led the league in rushing for two straight years. So I'd imagine that's what it's going to be like for Justin Fields. Too athletic to just let him sit back there in the pocket and not use his legs to his advantage like he has the last few weeks. But as a receiver, you have to have the mindset that you're not going to catch 10 balls or 8 balls or even 7 balls a week. You might get 4 or 5 big, giant plays because everybody's loading the box trying to stop Justin Fields and company. And you have to have that mindset that it's not going to be all you want. Peerless ended up asking. He got traded. That paid some good money to come down to Atlanta. And then a year and a half later, he's asking to be traded out of here because he wasn't happy. He was frustrated with the system. He wasn't getting along with different people. And unless you have the right mindset as a receiver in a system that they're going to play like with Chicago and even here in Atlanta now, it's a tough pill to swallow sometimes.
Brian, you were Vic's preferred target, as I recall. And how does that develop? Is it just, I mean, obviously you're a tall man, you're a big target guy, and he's on the move often. How did that mm-hmm. relationship develop? How did he discover you, let's say? I mean, we know you had a great career. I'm just curious how that chemistry developed with him.
Well, I think it starts, it's training camp, mini camp, OTAs, how much do you really want to build a relationship with your quarterback? And I knew, being the tall, slow white guy on the team, that I needed all the help I could get. And that was rooming with the quarterbacks, doing whatever I can to spend time with them, locker next to them, things like that. You build that relationship. And then I practiced every day. I mean, I didn't miss a practice. And anymore these days, guys take Wednesdays off or there's Thursdays, they're tired, so they get half the practice off. So I practice every day with Mike and did stuff before and after practice. And you just start developing the relationship where he can throw you a fade down on the goal line from the 5-yard line, and you know it's coming. And based off of the defensive back's leverage, it's going to be a back corner of the end zone by the pylon. Or based off the height discrepancy that we practice all week, he's just going to throw me a jump ball and say, go beat that guy, Finn. So it's working together, it's timing, and then the relationship you build. And I hope those young receivers are doing that in Chicago for you guys and Justin Fields.
And you had a 6'5 frame and really long arms, so you had a huge catch radius with good, dependable hands. So the Bears just traded for Chase Claypool. Now, he's much thicker than you. He's probably built closer to Algie Crumpler than Brian Finneran, or some blend of the two. But he's a very big guy. How have you seen wide receiver evolve over the years, not only just with the physical ability, but the way they're used? Because, you know, Claypool was a guy in Pittsburgh. He didn't only line up outside at his size. He'd line him up in the slot. And it feels like guys move around more in the game today, even for bigger, more statuesque receivers than was the case back in the day.
Yeah, man. I've loved watching it kind of progress. And I got to play with some big ones, too. Michael Jenkins, probably 6'4", 220, and Roddy White, although he's 6'1", 6'2", he was thick, too, at 210. And then when the Falcons decided I wasn't going to play here anymore, I was 34, 35 years old, and they told me they're going to try to get younger. And here comes a guy named Julio Jones. I said, mission accomplished, younger and better and faster. So I've watched these guys continue to grow and become, I mean, Mike Evans, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, these guys are special, special, big, giant athletes. And you just have to continue to grow and work. I mean, to see some of these guys when I go down on the field and watch them anymore these days, Patrick and Anthony, you guys, you watch those guys, you're like, was I out here with these monsters? Because these guys are humongous, even the receiver and tight end positions anymore.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, speaking of a big guy, Cordarrelle Patterson, everybody here in Chicago is familiar with him. I know he's coming off an injury. He's played the last 2 weeks, but he's had limited kind of number of carries and catches. Will his role expand today? Do you think we'll see more of him?
I certainly hope so. He's too good. He loves the game of football, guys. He plays like I want to play when if I had put a helmet back on. I mean, gets downhill, runs physical, doesn't go out of bounds, sniffs out the first down marker and the goal line when he's down there. He's got a nose to score touchdowns, and he loves the idea of playing football. You can just see it exuding out of his body when he's on the football field. And I think it was two weeks ago, maybe. He had a good first half. I think he had like 7 or 8 touches, 65 yards, whatever it was. And he had 2 touches the rest of the game. I mean, it was like, what are we doing? We're getting away from a veteran who knows how to run, who runs hard, who's been effective and efficient every time he seems to touch the football. Let's start feeding him some more. So I hope you're exactly right. I think maybe he's on a bit of a pitch count, but he's been on the field for 2 straight weeks, and now it's time to get him the rock in the entire football game.
You know, it's amazing to watch him because he was here, and they brought him in. And, you know, obviously he was drafted as a wide receiver and kind of made his impact as a return guy. It wasn't until he really got to New England that they started using him in different ways. And the Bears seemed befuddled as to how to get anything out of him. And now he's a running back. I mean, it's extraordinary to watch kind of the way his career's gone. The other thing is, that personality that you see there was not here in Chicago. Like, he was just lower key. He was really good in the locker room with the guys. Everybody loved him. But I think maybe they didn't know how to use him, and that kind of kept him a little bit shy, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know what it is. I think we still didn't believe it going to training camp this year, guys. I was watching him. I was like, why is Patterson still working with the running backs? I mean, every single rep was running back this year in training camp and OTAs. I was waiting for the receiver, and they never would do it. And I wasn't sure it was going to work. But after watching him last year and the first part of this year before he banged up his knee, he's just a football player. You can put him at receiver in the slot. You can put him at running back, where he's been super effective this year for us. So whatever happened, maybe it was Arthur Smith kind of seeing something that he did in New England and being able to turn that into what he's become today.
Aside from Grady Jarrett, is there anyone else actually lining up on defense for the Falcons?
That's hilarious. I said this week is a Dean Pease kind of week, because he's got to prove to me he can coach some ball. He's been a little bit handcuffed, boys, with the injuries and lack of talent on the defensive side of the football. So he's trying to piece this thing together, and it has not been good. It's been really frustrating to watch. So Grady continues to get double teamed, and it's not his fault. I'll double team him too if the other guys aren't making plays. So we're waiting for somebody to make a play. I'm waiting for Dean Pease to drop the perfect defense and get these guys situated, and it just hasn't happened yet. So hopefully, maybe this is the week against your Bears where our defense can get right, because it has been really frustrating to watch at times. We got guys, I mean, these are NFL football players that have gone through combines and college careers and everything else, but I don't know if there's some kryptonite on that side of the football. They can't seem to get to the quarterback and sack them. They can't seem to get off the field on third down. So it's been a bit of a frustrating year defensively, for sure.
Sounds like the Bears defense. Hey, man, you talked about playing with Michael Vick. Well, then you're going against Justin Fields. So how should Dean Pease play Justin Fields? What hurt you guys when you had Michael Vick as far as a game plan? Blitzing him, you know, playing back in coverage, loading the box. What do you expect today?
We had a tough time, I can remember, with Tampa Bay, the Tampa 2, with Rondé Barber and Sapp and Simeon Rice and all the different guys, Derek Brooks, guys they had flying around on defense, John Lynch. I mean, when you have a defense like that, they can play straight up cover 2. You can mix in a few different blitzes and things like that. But when you're really good at what you do, it's like the Legion of Boom when they had that cover 3 up in Seattle, because the front 7 was getting after the quarterback and stuffing the run so much, those guys can just sit back there and feast. Well, Tampa Bay was really good at Tampa 2. They had athletes all over the field that could run a little bit, and they seemed to kind of either confuse Mike Vick, when we played him back in the day, and be able to contain him as well. As soon as you go two-man or to get a 1-high and forget about the quarterback when you're playing guys like Vick and Justin Fields and even Mariota to a certain extent, they can hurt you with their legs, and that's what you try to prevent. Do you have a spy? I mean, I would imagine you try to spy Justin Fields after what he's done the last 2 weeks with the ball in his hands. So takes away one defender as well. So you got to pick your poison. You got to bring it when you think you can bring it, and you got to sit back and play a nice solid zone when you think you can kind of make him be a passer and maybe make him make a mistake.
Brian, there's so many ex-Bears and ex-Bears GMs connected to this game, ex-Bears coaches, right? The offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Have you heard from any of these guys? You know, has Phil Emery made an appearance or Ryan Pace? Have you heard from them other than the obvious people that have to talk? Has anyone said anything? Just curious.
We really haven't. No. I had one of our guys on 680 The Fan, the afternoon drive, was talking about how you have all those guys, former Bears executives and coaches, and we really have not heard. They're kind of behind the scenes.
Right.
From what I can tell. So I haven't heard a whole lot from him, not publicly anyway. Mm-mm.
Hey, Brian, great stuff. Really appreciate all the insights.
Thanks,
Brian. And I'm assuming you took Atlanta in the game?
Yeah. What is it, 3 points today?
I think.
I like the Falcons to figure out a way to win this week and keep our hopes alive just long enough to make us hurt real bad when they lose it down the stretch.
That's a good prediction. All
I think
right,
he's
buddy.
In the wrong city. He sounds like he's in the
right? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Holy,
right,
we're not
boys.
In
have
it.
Have a good one.
Great stuff, Brian. Thank you. Right. That's Brian Finneran, WCNN 680 The Fan in Atlanta. That's hysterical, Pat. I mean, that you're absolutely right. I mean, Anthony and I got a call at the end of the show we did on Thursday, and the guy wanted to shut down Justin Fields for fear that he'd get hurt. Like, we've seen enough. We got the quarterback. Bring him back in 2 years after the team's built. And then, oh my God.
The Andrew Luck right. approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be right back. It's the pregame show. You got Patrick Manley, Anthony Heron, and I'm called Mully, and the Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score.
Obviously, a lot of excitement through our building tonight. We feel really fortunate to be able to get Justin, you know, in the area of the draft, we were able to select him. The excitement throughout our whole building, you can feel it as I walk down here tonight, what he's going to do for the future of our organization. There's so much, guys, that goes into this process, as you well know, but starting with Matt, and our scouts and our coaches as we build into this moment and into tonight. But I think, you know, when we select a quarterback, the situation that quarterback is coming into is critical. And I think we provide a great situation, as I kind of alluded to a couple of days ago, for that quarterback's development to happen. Andy is our starter, and we're going to have a really good plan in place to develop Justin and do what's best for our organization to win games.
It's the pregame show on the Score. Patrick Manley, Anthony Heron, and I'm Mike Mulligan. I do the morning show. Look, guys, that is the voice of Ryan Pace, and he was here for 7 years. And the best thing he did, apparently, was draft Justin Fields. That's from April 29th, 2001, when he came down after they made the big deal and traded up and got Justin Fields and felt like they had the quarterback of the future. We haven't seen Pace. I mean, I know that they got rid of most of the guys that he drafted, but his fingerprints are still on this team. Are you surprised that he didn't want to take a bow over Justin Fields, or is it still too painful?
No, I'm not surprised. I think that's just who he is. I mean, he's, you know, I think I heard some guys on the station talking about, you know, that he didn't do a great job here, obviously. I thought 7 years was a little too long. I thought he didn't need to stay here the last couple of years. But that doesn't mean you're not a good guy. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's a good guy. He's well-respected. And I think he understands, hey, I'll let Justin Fields speak for me with his play. I don't need to come out and speak for myself. So that's the way I feel about that.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, when it comes down to it, he had a bunch of picks here. The ones that stand out to me, the first pick I remember getting really excited about was Roquan. I felt like, all right, as opposed to all these projects that he was taking, where, oh, we gotta see whether or not Kevin White develops into an NFL receiver. We gotta see if Leonard Floyd develops into a true NFL pass rusher. All right, we got this quarterback. Let's see if they can make something out of this kid that nobody really knows that much about, Trubisky. Then they took Roquan Smith. I said, all right, that's a day one starter. You're in the top 10 of the draft year after year, Ryan Pace. You finally took a day one starter. Roquan worked out. pretty well for the Bears, and now Justin Fields. I mean, when he took Justin Fields last year, there were a lot of folks, myself included, hopeful that if he drops, would the Bears be willing? We've seen Pace be aggressive before. They were aggressive. They went up and got Fields, but that was where Ryan Pace fell short as much as anything. I understand the idea, the concept that we all discussed for years while he was here of trying to take projects, trying to take developmental people with traits, but you need to have an infrastructure in place for how you develop that talent, how you maximize their skills, both throughout the week and throughout the off season, and then in season, put them in positions for success. And between Ryan Pace and then, of course, over the second half of his tenure plus, Matt Nagy, they weren't developing the talent that they got into Hallis Hall. And my impression is there's an attempt to restructure that, to refine that by the new brass in place, where Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus constantly talk about development, constantly talk about fundamentals. And that, especially when you got a roster this young, it should, when you're doing it correctly, end up making a difference for how your franchise can have some sustainability to it.
And Phil Emery works there too. Obviously, Doc Emery, you know, predates Ryan Pace. That was the most absurd period of time. That was like some sort of a comedy, like you know, English comedy. Doors slamming and people coming out, and someone going in, and you know, on and off the stage. That just turned into farce.
Wide receivers fighting with kickers. That's how bad it got.
You got the weeping assistant coach apologizing to the quarterback. I mean, it just got crazy. And you go back and look at that, and, you know, he was either going to hire Bruce Arians, or he was going to hire Mark Trestman. And it just came down to that bad decision ended up kind of – we haven't heard from Phil in a long time.
Yeah, and, guys, that – obviously, I was on those teams. I was there when Phil came in. I knew Phil from the beginning when he was under Jerry Angelo, right, and left and then came back, and have a lot of respect for him as a man, a great friend of mine, but I do disagree with some of the moves he made. I've told him that. I wrote a letter to him about the Brian Urlacher when he was going to let Brian Urlacher go.
Right.
And I said, listen, you can't do this. He's so integral to this team. Okay, yes, he's not the Hall of Fame level of athlete or player right now, but he is so important to this team and the transition from Lovie Smith to Mark Trestman, that you have to keep him. You need to keep him in this locker room because he will sell the team to Mark Trestman. Brian Urlacher is a Chicago Bear.
Right.
You know,
right,
he's played for Dicteron and Lovie Smith. Love Lovie, obviously, but he's a Chicago Bear. And I said, I think you're making a mistake by letting him walk. You know, I just think he'll help Mark Trestman and this new regime walk into this locker room, and he'll sell it to him. And he said, no, I disagree. I don't think that's going to help at all. And I think it's obvious he made a mistake. I think there's some of those older guys on that team did not buy into what Mark Trestman was selling, and he kind of showed it as it went along. And that was a Phil Emery issue that he made a mistake on. And then obviously I thought he made a mistake first off, but by firing Lovie Smith. But Phil just
10-6.
The team just turned just sour, you know, when he took charge.
Well, the disrespect for Urlacher. You know, there's mm-hmm. ways of moving on from someone, but to leave him hanging and then give him a ultimatum and then replace him, basically 5 minutes later. Brian talked to him and you know, next thing you know, he's got a new guy signed and they announced that
made us sick in the locker room.
I mean, honestly, made us sick to
treat one of yours like that and one of the all-time greats, first ballot Hall of Famer like that. It made us sick.
It's interesting when you evaluate the role that Bears ownership, the Callis, the McCaskey, the Hallis family, and just what, you know, how they have to be able to evaluate this moving forward. Because, you know, when you're thinking about the coaching candidates that have rolled through over the years, you know, it's not like John Fox didn't have a resume when he was hired, but it fell flat while he was here. It's not like other folks weren't trying to get Mac Nagy. He was one of the hottest names in coaching when he was hired, and that fell resoundingly flat, as did things with Ryan Pace. And that's where, just organizationally, infrastructurally, that's where, you know, my hope is, and I'm you know, getting inklings of that just with the way that Ryan Poles sounds and the methodical, seemingly calculated approach he's taking, and Matt Eberflus, the kind of patient, calculated way he seems to be going about things. My hope is that we're seeing the early stages where maybe ownership is getting a, has gotten a better sense for not only do we need to hire kind of quote unquote the right guy or some individual that other people wanted as well, but how do we maybe empower them to put the infrastructure in place to modernize this Bears franchise? Because, you know, it's one thing to hire the individual, but are you actually setting them up for success? Because we've seen the last few regimes here, there might be that one season where things are cool, or maybe not even that one season, but
right,
you know, whether the first season went great or went awful, we haven't seen it get better. We haven't seen the last few regimes improving as they've been with the Chicago Bears.
It's an interesting point, because I heard earlier in the week, trying to remember, I think it was Colin Cowherd, who talked about the Bears and said, for the first time in a long time, you can say they got the right head coach, they got the right general manager, they got the right quarterback, they got the right offensive coordinator. Now, I don't know that you can say all that. I think that's yet to be determined. I'm not – hey, I really appreciate Matt Eberflus coming in here and being organized and you know, changing this, all the pre-snap penalties and all the horrors of the last administration. But, you know, they're just starting this thing. You know, I hope everybody's going crazy about the draft pick. You can get great players at the top of a draft, as you mentioned. You can also draft a guy that's a injured receiver that you probably didn't do enough homework on. You can draft a quarterback that that you spent everything on. You can't. You hire a coach. You do everything, and you can't get it out of them. You know, if you don't understand the importance of the draft and how 50-50 nature this thing is, and I get it. If you draft higher, odds are that you're going to get better players, and everyone's talking about, you know, right now the Bears would pick number 6 or something, and that's where Waddle went, the receiver from Miami that we saw at number 6. That's where Barcavius Mingo went, and he was here last year as an afterthought, the guy trying to hang on to the league. Oh, you know, that guy did okay. Well, he was a first-round draft pick. He was the 6th overall selection. You just, you know, Trubisky went number 2. It is a crapshoot. And determining if you have the right GM, and obviously the last two are in Atlanta, that happens after a number of draft picks, and you see what you bring in.
Yeah, I just still, my fingers are crossed. I mean, they've messed.
Yeah, I agree.
They've hired the wrong people so many times in the past that it's just, my fingers are crossed. You go back to 2018, we're flying high, right, in Chicago with the Bears with Matt Nagy, young head coach, and doing well with that great defense. Obviously, you lose Vic Fangio, so there's a lot of moving parts that can happen that you don't know that if it's going to be successful. So mine is just fingers crossed. I just hope they get them right. And you're correct about the draft. You never know. We had Curtis Enos, who I thought was going to be a great player. I think he was drafted number 5, right? That blew out his knee. I mean, you just never know that if that draft pick is going to be a franchise-changing player. And then the other thing is free agency. You don't know what's going to happen when you pay somebody all this money. They might change. You know, you've seen it. Good players go to other places, and they get that big paycheck, and next thing you know, like, oh, I made it. I'm done. And they don't bring the same intensity, the same playability, or whatever it is to the team. So that's just, my fingers are crossed with these guys right now. And I think this offseason, we know this offseason is very, very important for this franchise.
It's huge. There's going to be a lot of turnover of the roster, and right now there's a bunch of guys who recognize there's an opportunity here to show that they should be a part of whatever the future holds for the Chicago Bears. And there's, you know, the end of innocence is going to come this offseason and going into next season, where, you know, a lot of the city can have the smiles on their faces right now because you see what's happening with the quarterback, and there's the promise of the offseason to come and all these unwrapped Christmas gifts that Ryan Poles is going to be responsible for in his pseudo Santa Claus kind of mode here, because there's going to be money to spend. Is he going to do it wisely? Is the roster, as it's reshaped, going to lead the Bears to more wins? Right now, 3-7, you can have a city smiling like Chicago is at 3-7 right now. You certainly want to maximize that as much as you can. And, you know, we'll see what the future ends up holding here. But Ryan Poles is going to have a big say and a big offseason to help figure that out.
Okay, we got a lot to get into. We're going to have to talk about one of our least favorite subjects next. That, of course, the Bears defense and how do they improve.
They have a young player
who's playing well, right? Don't they have a player who's had a couple good games? We'll mention Jack Sanborn and talk about him. And then we're going to talk to Grody later on. Grody, I mean, this is a huge game for him. This is the Demir Byrd, Pat. I mean, Grody's been crazy.
That's right. I forgot about that.
We got a lot left, and we'll get right to it. It's the pregame show here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.